listeners will recall that we last left Rav Baruch visiting the town of Yanovich after he was engaged to his future wife Rivka, the son of Rav Avram the Gertener, having been in Vitebsk for a while, and he wanted to visit some of his friends of his youth, particularly Rav Zalman Chaim, who was known as the Shamus of the Beis HaMedrash of the marketplace of Yanovich. But Zalman Chaim was so much more than the Shamus. He had a profound influence, not only on the entire Yanovich, but also on the entire surrounding area. And even such a conceited individual like Zalman Leib, a Torah scholar, but very conceited, was turned around by Zalman Chaim's wonderful attributes and the way he regarded Zalman Leib. And so it was that when Baruch returned to Yanovich for the second time, he found Zalman Leib was well known in the town for his scholarship and good deeds. Baruch well knew that this remarkable change in Zalman Leib, who was Mordechai the Miller's son-in-law, that this change was due entirely to the fine example of goodness and mildness of character which was shown to him by Zalman Chaim. Baruch was now anxious to make a better acquaintance of Zalman Chaim and learn from him something from his virtues. He also wanted to learn more about Zalman Chaim's past, but Zalman Chaim was no longer in Yanovich. He had left the town a year previously, giving over the role of Shamus to another, and leaving no word as to whether he thought of returning at any time. Baruch wanted to renew his acquaintance with all his old friends, with all the people for whom he had worked during his stay in Yanovich. He also visited the Beis HaMedrash near the cemetery, which was his first home on arriving in the town. He still remembered his experiences there, his hopes, his pleasures, and his fears. He remembered, too, that last awful experience there, which sent him running to the other Beis HaMedrash in the marketplace where Zalman Chaim was Shamus. None of Baruch's old friends, the shopkeepers, bakers, the others whom he now visited, recognized him, for he was now a young man, soon to be married. He asked them all to tell him how they lived, what they thought, and about their experiences. He wanted to learn from them something that would help him make up his mind what should be his way of life for the future. There was the example of Zalman Chaim, devoting all his strength and energies to helping the ordinary folk. There was also the example of the great genius Rav Simcha Zelig, known as the Parash of Vitebsk, who lived a life of seclusion, spending day and night studying the Torah and looking down upon ordinary, uneducated people who were far removed from Torah study. Whose way of life was the right one? Baruch had reached the crossroads. Until now, he had spent his time in research and study, but he now had to choose which path to follow as his guiding line in life. Like everyone else who had met the Parsha of Vitebsk, Baruch could not but admire the great scholarship of this grand old man. He had the greatest possible respect for the Parsha, who came from a well-known family of scholars in Poland. When he was but a lad of 15, this Parsha was already called the Ilui, the prodigy of Stavisk. He knew the whole of Shas by heart, and his devotion to Torah study was unsurpassed. In addition, he used to fast every Monday, Thursday, and Friday. From his earliest youth, he would only indulge in Torah talk, and would have nothing whatever to do with an ignorant person. He would not have known what to say to such a person. Rav Simcha Zelig the Parsha came to Vitebsk as a young man and settled himself in one of the rooms of the Beis HaMedrash. He lived the life of a recluse for a manner of 50 years. It was now for Baruch to decide which of the two, Rabbi Simcha Zelig, with his vast Torah knowledge and life of solitude, or Zalman Chaim, with his many and beautiful activities among the Jewish people, came nearest to the Almighty's expectations. Baruch finally came to the conclusion that Zalman Chaim better fulfilled God's ideal, for by his way of life, he pleased both God and man. Although Zalman Chaim was no longer living in Yanovich, he had left his mark very clearly. At every step that Baruch took, he saw how much the influence of Zalman Chaim had meant to the Jews of Yanovich and the surrounding districts. At the Beis HaMedrash, where Zalman Chaim had been Shamas, Baruch found Zalman Leib giving a shiur to a large gathering. Zalman Leib was explaining the shiur in an enthusiastic and scholarly manner, but this did not surprise Baruch, who knew him of old as a learned scholar. What did surprise and please Baruch was the extreme devoutness with which Zalman Leib davened now, as contrasted with the hurried, offhand way in which he used to daven before, which seemed so devoid of any warmth or positive meaning. Baruch also had an opportunity of observing Zalman Leib at home. When he visited him, he found him deep at study, his face flushed with interest and enthusiasm as he delved into one of the books of the Maral of Prague. Baruch felt that Zalman Leib was a Jew with his whole heart and soul, as well as with his mind. There were others in Yanovich whom Baruch found changes for the better, especially among those who worshipped in the Beis HaMedrash in their marketplace and were thus under the guiding influence of Zalman Chaim. Take, for example, Pinya the tinsmith. He was among the first who used to come to Zalman Chaim to learn Ein Yankif. This same Pinya now attended the Gemara Shir, which was taught by a prominent member of the community, whose name was Yankif Isaac. This Shir was well known in the town, not only on account of its being given by this Yankif Isaac, but because it was attended by the most learned and scholarly Jews of the town. And here was Pinya sitting at the table, not merely a passive listener by any means, but actually participating in the learned discussion which was taking place. Here was proof enough that with patience, perseverance, and love, it was possible to educate and elevate ordinary folk, even though they had no education in their youth. Others who had thus benefited from Zalman Chaim's teaching and influence were Shimon the flour merchant, Shimon the butcher, and Fiva the potter. These three had regularly attended Zalman Chaim's Chumash Shir, and it had seemed at that time that they would never attain any higher degree of learning. Yet, Baruch now found them studying Mishnayos and apparently having a good understanding of the subject. But apart from the fact that Zalman Chaim had managed to turn these unlearned Jews into something like scholars, their character had vastly improved too. Whereas at one time they had stood in the marketplace, or in their shops, or at their stalls, engaged in idle gossip, or perhaps more often quarreling with each other, or hurling epithets at each other, which were not very nice, now they conduct themselves in exemplary fashion, as true God-fearing Jews. There were others, too, who came to the Beis HaMedrash to the Shir, who Baruch knew were there solely due to Zalman Chaim's influence. There was one individual whom everyone had once called Shaul the Ferdganov, Shaul the Horse Thief, and another called Zalman Leib the Musician. Shaul's nickname speaks for itself. As for Yankov Zalman, he had been looked upon with contempt for the fact that he used to play to the local landowners in their castles, and was known to conduct himself there in an un-Jewish manner. Now, however, Baruch found them completely changed in their conduct. They had both given up their previous means of livelihood. Shaul had taken up honest work, and Yankov Zalman now played only at Yiddish simchas, at Jewish festivities, and both spent their leisure time at the Beis HaMedrash. Yet a real revelation to Baruch was Mordechai the Miller, who had acquired a shop in Yanovich and was now the Gabbai at the Beis HaMedrash. This Mordechai, who had spent all his life in a village and had barely understood the simplest lesson, now attended the Gemara Shir and participated in the discussions. Here was another living example of what could be achieved for the ordinary uneducated Jew. Baruch was now convinced, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the right path for him to follow was not that of Rabbi Simcha Zelig, but that of Zalman Chaim B'Shamas, who had spread both Torah and good deeds among the ordinary people. One day, Baruch, who loved to go outside the town to admire God's handiwork, the beautiful nature, went for a long walk in the country. Baruch sat down to rest on a fallen tree trunk and soon lost himself in thought. His mind went back to the talk he had had with his brother-in-law, the scholarly Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, prior to Baruch's leaving Vitebsk. It took place on a warm and sunny day early in Nisan. After the cold winter which had passed, it was an absolute joy to sit in the warm sunshine. Baruch was on his way home from his work when, walking through the park, he saw his brother-in-law sitting on a bench. Baruch joined him, and an interesting discussion sprang up between them. Baruch had made a remark about the healing properties of the sun, whereupon his brother-in-law embarked upon a discussion on the question whether it was right or wrong to benefit from something which had served as an object of worship to idolaters. He brought arguments from the tractate of Avodah Zarah showing that it is permissible to benefit or have pleasure from something not created by man, even though this thing had been used by idolaters as their object of worship. He brought other quotations from tractate Psochem to show how it is possible to deduce that such benefit should be forbidden. Then he himself answered this apparent contradiction by saying, "But the obvious reply to such an argument is that where the object of worship, as in the case of the sun, which was created by the Almighty in the 6 days of creation, was in existence before the worshippers chose it as a deity, then there's no prohibition to benefit from it. God had created the sun for the specific benefit of mankind. It was given the power to spread light, to give plants strength to grow, and the earth to bring forth food for God's creatures. The sun also had healing properties, which could cure many diseases. The fact that the sun worshippers came along later and deified the sun is no reason for abstaining from the pleasure the sun holds for man." Baruch remembered how impressed he was at the time with the philosophy of his learned brother-in-law. But now that he had come back to Yanovish with his revelations of all that Zalman Chaim had achieved and the moral and material uplift of its inhabitants, it seemed to Baruch that scholarly expositions were comparatively unimportant when contrasted with the social welfare work of such a Jew as Zalman Chaim, who understood the realities of life and dealt so kindly and helpfully with the everyday problems of people. During his short stay in Yanovich, Baruch cultivated the friendship of Avram Yitzchok, the third son-in-law of Mordechai the Miller. This Avram Yitzchok was entirely influenced by Zalman Chaim in his outlook on life and his activities. He followed in his footsteps by teaching the simple working people and devoting his time to their welfare. Baruch studied the faces of the pupils sitting around the table at Avram Yitzchok's shir. There were old men, younger men, and even youths. Every one of them listened to the shir with obvious interest and pleasure. Avram Yitzchok had the power of explanation and the ability to draw and hold the attention of his listeners. To Baruch's astonishment, he saw that one of the pupils was none other than young Chaim, the son of Shimon, the flower dealer. Baruch remembered Chaim, the son of Shimon, from 3 years ago. This Chaim was a real black sheep, an absolute pest. He was up to every kind of mischief, and during the time when Baruch worked for Chaim's father, Shimon, carrying sacks of flowers to the bakers, Chaim plagued him at every opportunity. And now Baruch could hardly believe the evidence of his own eyes. Here was Chaim listening as keenly as the others, while Avram Yitzchak went on with his shear. His audience was so thrilled with the legends he used to tell them that they talked about them to their friends, and all were inspired by their moral teachings and influence. Baruch once listened as Avram Yitzchak told his class the story of Rabbi Akiva, of how he had been a humble and simple shepherd, uneducated, and in fact averse to scholars. Then he told of his change of heart when already a grown man, and how he began to turn towards the Torah and love it to such an extent that he had studied it until he became one of the greatest and most famous figures in Jewish history. Avram Yitzchak told this story with exceptional enthusiasm, obviously wanting his audience to realize the moral of the story, namely, that no matter how late one began one's education, every Jew should be encouraged by Rabbi Akiva's glorious example. Avram Yitzchak always used to say that scholars have a definite duty towards the ordinary folk, and he certainly practiced what he preached, for he utilized every occasion to take them under his wing and care for them in the way he had learned from the Shamash Zalman Chaim. Baruch had occasion to notice that despite the great and wide beneficial influence that Zalman Chaim had left behind him in Yanovich, there still existed some of the old spirit among the scholars of looking down upon the uneducated to the extent of treating them with contempt and ridicule. Such an instance was the following. It happened on a Monday at the time of Kriyas HaTorah. Shlomo the Baker, or Shlomo Vitebsk, as he was sometimes called, rushed into the Beis HaMedrash and immediately began to daven on his own, as the minyan was far ahead of him. Shlomo was a simple man, but a God-fearing Jew who was sincere in his every action, and certainly in his davening. The Shamash had not noticed that Shlomo was davening independently, and was at a point where he should not be interrupted, and so the Shamash called him up to the Torah. Shlomo went up to the Torah, after which he returned to his place, and continued with his davening at the point at which he had left off. When some of his fellow worshippers saw him taking his tzitzis and reciting the Shema, they realized he had made a break at an inappropriate point, and so they decided to have some fun at his expense. As soon as davening was over, they crowded around the innocent and unsuspecting Shlomo, calling him names and deriding him for his appalling ignorance. "Shame on you, you ignoramus! Don't you know that you dare not interrupt the Shema? So instead of giving honor to the Torah, you desecrated it." Shlomo, poor Shlomo, was mortified. It must indeed have been a terrible crime he had committed if even the great scholar and social leader of Yanovich, Yankiv Isaac, was among those who were deriding him and scoffing at his ignorance. Poor Shlomo was in tears. He began pleading with Yankiv Isaac to tell him in what way he could atone for his great sin, unintentional though it was. Nothing would be too hard or too painful for him to do, if only it would wipe out his offense against the Torah. "Don't you realize what a terrible sin you have committed?" said Yankiv Isaac to the unhappy man. "You have insulted the Torah and taken God's name in vain." Baruch, who was watching the scene, was horrified to find Yankiv Isaac behaving so meanly, and he was terribly distressed to see poor Shlomo's agony and shame. Tears stood in the baker's eyes as he begged Yankiv Isaac to tell him how he could possibly atone for his unwitting transgression. "The only way to purge you of your dreadful sin is for you to fast," said Yankiv Isaac to him sternly. In his awful misery, the poor baker did not see that he was only being laughed at. "I shall commence my fast at once," said Shlomo to Yankiv Isaac. eager to show his readiness to atone for his sin. "You ignoramus," retorted Yankov Isaac. "Don't you know that a fast of an individual must be arranged before Mincha on the previous day? It is a disgrace that we must put up with such ignorance." And off he went with his cronies, all laughing as if enjoying a grand joke. The poor baker's discomfiture was pitiful to behold, and just as Baruch was wondering what he could say to comfort him, a young man stepped up to Shlomo, put his hand on his shoulder, and said to him, "Don't you worry, my friend. You have done nothing wrong. It was quite in order for you to interrupt your davening at the place you were up to, and you have done nothing to offend the Almighty. On the contrary, he is much more likely to accept your honesty and sincerity than the mean attitude of Yankov Isaac." Baruch saw that it was Avram Yitzchok, the third son-in-law of Mordechai the miller, who spoke so kindly and feelingly to Shlomo, and he felt he would so much like to learn more about this splendid young man. Shlomo was so moved by Avram Yitzchok's desire to console him that the tears just flowed down his cheeks unchecked. "Why do you cry?" asked Avram Yitzchok in surprise. "I am reminded of a somewhat similar happening which occurred in my youth," replied Shlomo, wiping his face with his handkerchief. "But you probably have no time to listen to my story," he continued. "You must have more important things to do." "No, indeed, I haven't. Do please tell me. I am most interested," said Avram Yitzchok, anxious to cheer the baker and help him forget the nasty experience he had just been through. And so Shlomo began his story. "My father was quite a scholar. He was a well-known Melamed in Vitebsk and greatly respected as a God-fearing Jew. He used to go to Daven every morning at the old Beis HaMedrash, and when I was about 10 years of age, he began to take me with him. Once, when I was about 12 years old, I was davening one day when I looked out of the window. Something distracted my attention. I forgot I was in shul and got lost in thought. Suddenly, I remembered where I was and wanted to resume my prayers. But of course, the minyan was far ahead of me. And in order to finish at the same time as they, I had to skip quite a piece. For some days, my conscience troubled me. I didn't know what to do. I felt I ought to tell my father, and then I thought it would be a worse thing to upset him than the fact of having missed some part of the davening. In any case, I argued, I'm not yet bar mitzvah, so it's not really so serious. When Yom Kippur came round, my father was invited to give a sermon, and of all subjects, he chose to speak about the importance of being sincere and of the wickedness of hypocrisy. He spoke so feelingly and so earnestly that I just felt as if he knew all about my sin and was talking directly to me. As soon as I could get him on one side, I told him what had happened. He was very stern with me and made me promise that I would never again do such a thing. He said I must always daven out of a siddur, not take my eyes away from the words. Then I would not be distracted by anything that might be going on around me. I can honestly say that I have since followed that advice without exception. My poor father, God rest his soul, wanted me to become a scholar like him, but unfortunately he became very ill and died when I was but a lad of 14. Being the eldest child, I had to help my mother keep the home going, and when soon after she too died, I had the whole responsibility of supporting my poor little orphan brothers and sisters. I saw to it that my brothers should be able to attend the yeshiva and help my sisters get married. You can guess it was no easy task for me, and though I did not mind the hard work, I always regretted that I had no time to continue with my studies. I spent my leisurely time saying Tillim and davening, and although occasionally I dipped into a Gemara, I never had time to learn Shulchan Aruch. That is why I did not know the law regarding interrupting my davening. "But you must be tired of my talking so long," Shlomo said subtly. "Not at all. Do carry on," Avram Yitzchok assured him. And Baruch nodded in agreement to show that he too was most interested to hear. Thus reassured, Shlomo continued, "I worked as a baker, and believe me, it was no easy work. The hours were long, and as you know, it meant mostly working at nights, so that there would be fresh bread and cakes in the morning. Eventually, I earned enough to get married, and that, I think, is all there is to my story, Shlomo concluded. The whole painful incident left a profound impression upon Baruch. His heart grieved for poor Shlomo, whom he saw literally writhing in agony under the impact of Yankov Isaac's cruel jest a while ago. Baruch would have felt badly enough about such a scene under any circumstance, but what disappointed him more than anything was to see the so-called great Yankov Isaac, one of the most respected leaders in the Jewish community of Yanovich, taking such an active part in the persecution of the simple, honest, if somewhat illiterate, Shlomo the baker. At that time, Yankov Isaac was a flax merchant and was very, very successful. He enjoyed his wealth and his place of honor in the community. He did not care that he was not loved as was his father, who was revered by everybody, for he saw no necessity of seeking popularity among people whom, in his conceit, he considered his inferiors. That is why he thought it was a great joke to make fun of that poor, simple baker Shlomo when the latter responded to the Aliyah in the middle of Shema. How different from Yankov Isaac was Avram Yitzchok. Baruch was so impressed by the way Avram Yitzchok treated the baker that he made up his mind to observe him, see how he lived, how he spent his time, and what he could learn from him and about him. For he felt that he, Avram Yitzchok, was a young man well worth taking notice of. All he discovered convinced him once again that here was another example of one who found serving the humble and ordinary folk more worthwhile than anything else. After finding out more about Avram Yitzchok's past, which the Rishtiyah de Gerebbe speaks about at length in the Zichroinus, and it's worthwhile for those who want to know more about it to see it inside, he saw, Baruch saw also what type of person Abzalman Chaim was, that he too came from Tzadikim Nestorim. And since Abzalman Chaim had already left the town, Baruch felt that he had nothing more to do in Yanovich, particularly as Baruch wanted to visit some of the other towns and townlets where he, Baruch, had spent his youth. He felt he would especially like to revisit the Brumshul, and so, packing his few belongings together, Baruch set off for his journey to the Brumshul.